From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last month when the first major snowfall of the season hit Rochester. Nearly a foot of snow fell in some places. We went back to that familiar routine, bundle up, dig out, and then, in Rochester, a hero emerged. Or perhaps you would consider him a villain. Someone walked down the middle of the street on Mount Hope for almost 2 hours, right in the middle of the road, apparently heading to work or heading home, heading somewhere. The sidewalks were buried in deep snow, unshoveled, unplowed. And it appeared to be a kind of singular protest, a guy walking in the middle of the street, cars beeping their horns behind him. He was signaling that pedestrians still matter in the winter, not just the cars. Who was this ski-masked man? Does anyone know? We have not been able to identify him, but his actions led to a debate on the Rochester Urbanist Facebook page. More than 100 comments later, we're talking about whether urbanism dies or perhaps freezes during the cold winter months. If we're truly going to be a multimodal place, shouldn't that be year-round? People were posting pictures of snow plowed onto sidewalks, snow plowed into bike lanes, snow blocking everything but the cars. This is not just a conversation about snow plowing, although that's part of it. It's a conversation about how to be a vibrant place for urbanism no matter the season, and really, truly accessible for everyone. Our guests this hour include Jason Haremza, who is a planner, an urbanist, a citizen. Welcome back to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Jason Pierce, who is a cycling coordinator for the Rochester Cycling Alliance at Reconnect Rochester. Jason, welcome. Jesse, welcome. There's lots of names here. Hi, Jesse.
Lots of J's. No worries.
There's another one, Justin. Hi, Justin Young, member of the advocacy team at the Center for Disability Rights. He's a pooled trust advocate. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Matthew Denker. Matt is a developer with Labeled Living. Welcome to you as well.
Good afternoon.
Okay, so let's just ask all of you, hero or villain, the dude walking in the middle of the street on a snowy day with all the cars slowly stuck behind him, angry, beeping their horns. Denker, hero or villain?
Oh, thank you for letting me go first, because I get to waffle then. I can say that I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you could be both. I think you could be both a hero in bringing
Senator
this up.
Denker,
yeah,
you must
right
choose on this day of votes over impeachment.
Oh, if I have to choose, I'm going to go with hero. I think it's fabulous.
Okay. But you also think there might have been an etiquette breach there?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely believe in pedestrians in this thing. But I also feel as though it's one of those things where when, say, a red light is out, everyone manages to eventually get through the intersection anyway, even if it's not smooth, that maybe blocking everyone for hours wasn't the answer. But also that doesn't mean he should have no rights in this situation and should have, you know, just kind of crawled his way on snowplowed sidewalks. I feel like it could be a back and forth sort of situation.
Okay. That's all. Justin Young, hero or villain?
Well, I would say that that for going out of his way to make sure that there's access for pedestrians, that is hero worthy. Because in the disability community, those that are pedestrians that rely on the sidewalks and navigating the streets without cars or vehicles need access to those streets. And there's been situations where chair users that I know of have been stuck because of snow being piled somewhere. So I would say that he was a hero for that. And beyond that, I don't really know the villain side of it.
Okay. Jesse, is there a hero or a villain side to you here?
I think I'm like Matt. I'm in the middle. If I had to decide, I would go with hero. But I look at a lot of things from a bicycle perspective, and it's important to note that cyclists and pedestrians do have some responsibilities too. One of them, if you're a pedestrian walking on the street, you are supposed to walk as far to the curb as practicable and not out, you know, in the middle. So, you know, technically he was breaking some rules, but I still err on the side of hero.
Okay, Jason?
Well, like the other speakers, I humans are complicated, so I'm going to say both. But if I had to choose, I'm going to say hero, because sometimes you need to engage in civil disobedience to make a point.
Okay, so in this case, part of the response is, well, until the city starts plowing the sidewalks and showing that they care, that man is going to be a hero and we should see more of that. I don't necessarily know that that's always fair. And Jason, I'll start with you in this case here. You hear people kind of complaining or debating about the city's role versus the property owner's role. When we look at how to make sure, let's just start with sidewalks and then we'll kind of go from there. Whose responsibility is it?
Well, it starts with the property owner. The city law is pretty clear that the property owner is to clear the sidewalks of all obstructions. That being said, I think the law is unfair in that it treats the pedestrian infrastructure differently than the vehicular infrastructure. And I would, you know, just ask people to engage in a little thought exercise and imagine a world where what if you had to clear the street in front of your house of snow to let cars go by, and how would the transportation system work in that case?
Okay, fair enough. When we think about the way this sidewalk debate makes people angry, Matt Denker, they go, well, how dare the city or how dare my town? Is that myopic? Whose responsibility do you tend to think it should be?
I'm absolutely a systems guy. I know what the law says right now, but it has to be the city in this case. It's a piece of infrastructure that everyone is there and everyone is using and that we need to do. I mean, I know there are plenty of places where property owners own the sidewalks on their house. That's not the case in the city of Rochester. The right-of-way extends over the sidewalk everywhere. And, you know, that means the sidewalk gets maintained by the city. If it's broken in front of your house on the street, you don't need to repair the sidewalk. And I think that explicitly accepts the sidewalk into the public infrastructure in Rochester and cities where the city does own the sidewalk, and that we should all be paying not just to maintain it, you know, free of cracks and broken parts, but that it should be plowed too. Should be taken care of by the city.
Jesse, some of the I think the confusion stems from the fact that just looking at what our intern MRA Stein put together for us, Penfield, Webster, Greece, Brighton, Rochester, every community has sort of different standards for what they're going to do in regards to just sidewalk snow removal and other things. So I think it can be confusing, particularly for people who move. But what's the standard for you that says our rules and our guidelines indicate that we do care about things that are not just automobiles?
Well, I mean, I like to point to the plans that the city of Rochester has in motion. You can pick five or six plans that all have more people walking, more transit, more biking as a goal of the city. And if you want to have that happen and you want more people to be less car dependent and really free people from car ownership, you have to take some additional measures to kind of give them that little push and make them feel welcome. So, yeah, I think the city could step up its bike infrastructure, plowing, sidewalk plowing in order to accommodate that.
Okay. And Justin, for you, what's the sign that indicates a city, any community, cares about access for everyone? What's that list look like?
Well, I would say that it makes sure that snow is being plowed, that we need to remember that in a lot of from the viewpoint of a pedestrian, if the snow is more than a few inches, that can be determined whether a disabled person can move about and do what they want to do, as opposed to being trapped inside their home. Especially, like I said at your first question, there's been situations in the city property area where wheelchair users have been stuck in the snow because the snow has not been plowed. There's cases, in particular, the Amtrak station. There's always been what I would call finger pointing, where you don't really know who has the authority to maintain the snow plowing of that area, whether it's the county, the city, or Amtrak. When the Center for Disability Rights representatives have reached out to Amtrak or the city or the county, they all say something different. So there's nothing really universal answer to who's in charge of this. Also, the RTSX or the RGRTA properties, the bus stops, is this kind of the same thing, where the city and the transit authority have been going back and forth for, to my knowledge, at least the last 4 or 5 years. So I think we need to make sure that we're all on the same page and that who knows who is responsible for maintaining the snow plowing is actually doing their jobs.
Okay, fair enough. Already an email, and listeners, before I read the email, if you want to join the conversation, are you satisfied, wherever you live, town, city, suburb, village, whatever the case may be, that your community has true access beyond just the automobile 4 seasons out of the year? especially in winter? I know it's more of a challenge, but what's it take and what are you experiencing? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And David says, hold on one second. David says, it's a joke for people who have to bicycle, starting with the fact that most cars think you don't have a right to be on the road to begin with, but then finding snow in just about every bike lane on days where we get moderate snowfall, it gets to be pretty tiring pretty quickly. That's from David. All right, Jesse, you are smiling and nodding, so why don't you pick up the thread from here? You're as a bicyclist, what is it like in the winter?
So New York state law stipulates that if you're riding on a street on a bicycle and there's a bicycle facility, such as a bike lane, it's the law to use it, unless it's unsafe. So if there's a parked car there or it's full of twigs or glass or ice or piled snow, you do not have to use that bike lane. So that's a common occurrence for me. I bicycle every day year round. I haven't had a car in 6 years. And when there's snow piled up in the bike lane, I have no choice but to move out into the other traffic lane, which, as you can imagine, earns the ire of motorists. But I'm following every traffic law that exists.
What do drivers say to you? What's an example of either stories of either being hit, close to being hit, sort of sideswiped, or people yelling at you? What do they say?
Well, I mean, it doesn't happen as often as you think. I think the vast majority of motorists just pass you when they can. I don't think a lot of motorists are aware that they're legally allowed to just move over that solid yellow line in the middle of the street in order to pass you at a safe distance. I think a lot more motorists would do that if they knew that they were allowed to do that. But the vast majority play nice. And what I tell students, because I'm a bicycle instructor, is it's not the worst thing in the world being honked at or yelled at. The danger comes when you're not seen. But if you're being honked at or yelled at, they see you.
But when they yell at you, here's just an example. Watching the reporting that our colleague Brett Dahlberg did in the past winter into spring, in which for 6 weeks, everywhere he went by bicycle, which is just about everywhere he goes, he was recording that interaction just in case things happened. And a lot of things happened. He was hit, sort of knocked down a few times. There are motorists who would yell at him and say, get off the road or get off our street. People yell at you. And again, I'm not saying all the time. I'm not saying every ride or every day. But there are some drivers who see a bicycle and think, what are you doing here? You don't have a right to be here.
That's a common experience, and we have much to do in American society and at the local level towards changing the culture. And I work a lot with City Hall officials that are very vocal about that need to change the culture, to work with Reconnect Rochester and the Rochester Cycling Alliance to let motorists know that we have every right to the street, that there are certain places that we are actually banned from riding the sidewalk. So there's a big culture change that has to happen, and we're eager to take that offer up with the city and help with them.
Yeah, I see. You seem like a nice guy. My colleague Brett is a nice guy until he has been pushed around on a bicycle by someone who doesn't have a right to do it. And then he is a ferocious machine. And I would not want to be on the receiving end. We love you, Brett, and we love your reporting. What's your demeanor when a car, when a driver says, you don't have a right to be here, get off the road?
Oh, it depends on my mood. there's times where I say things that I later regret, but I leave most satisfied. I leave those aggressive negotiations most satisfied when I say, look, I'm following every traffic law that exists. I'm exactly where I should be. Knock it off.
Fair enough. And what is the increase in challenge for you to commute in the winter? How often do you find your lanes not accessible?
I am proud that for a quintessential wintry city like Rochester, streets are cleared most of the time. So for being a quintessential wintry city, I'm pretty proud of what we've done. You know, there are some dicey days to ride where I might choose to walk or take a bus or an Uber, but the vast majority of the time, the streets are okay for me. There's times that I choose to take residential side streets all the way to work, as opposed to main arterials, but it really depends on the condition of the road. The great thing about winter traffic is that traffic tends to slow down, and as a cyclist, that's in your favor.
Yeah, I think, Jesse, we found during some of Brett's reporting that even in the non-snowy times of year, there will be times where a car, for example, will be parked in a bike lane. And it might be, again, I'm not calling out the RPD or anybody else, but even people in official capacity. And often the response is, well, it was just for a little while, and we had nowhere else to park it. In the same way that a plow operator might say, look, I had nowhere to throw the snow, so it's going in the bike lane. What do you say in those kind of moments?
Well, I mean, I think that there's more that can be done. You can have another plow go through and get the snow that's in the bike lane up onto the little space there between the curb and the sidewalk. So it's doable. And the Rochester cycling community understands that these things have to happen incrementally. We point to the Rochester 2034 plan every chance that we get now, and they acknowledge in that plan that the city does have to make some strides towards making bike facilities clear in the winter. They know that it's difficult, but they acknowledge that we must make strides in that direction.
We're going to return to Plan 2034 in just a moment to hear from all of our guests on that, but let me try to work through some of the feedback we're already getting. Jane in Rochester first. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Evan. I live downtown, and when I first moved here about 15 years ago, there were many, many bus shelters covered with the heating. And so it was much easier to take the bus, and they disappeared. And I never really talked to anybody that's real disturbed about that, but they just disappeared. So that option in terms of transportation for about 6 months of the year for me, because it's too cold to stand in a wind chill warning and snow storm warnings out and wait for the bus. It's even dangerous. So I don't understand why they were removed. The people are still the same. And maybe someone else knows why we don't have that, that would improve the choices that we have for transportation. Thank you very, very much.
Jane, thank you. Any guests want to jump in on the? Go ahead, Jason.
So my understanding on the bus shelters is that the actual stops were removed in most cases as well. It was part of the changeover to the transit center that was built. So the heated bus shelters on Main Street were replaced by the transit center as a transfer point for buses downtown. So, the bus shelters were also reaching the end of their lifespan. They were pretty deteriorated at the point they were removed. So that's my understanding of why they disappeared.
Okay. Justin Young, do you want to add to any of that? I mean, I think some of what Jane's concern consistently details is the way that for people in either the disability community, people who don't have automobiles, they don't feel prioritized when it comes to whether it's shelter, whether it's bus routes, et cetera. Do you want to add to some of what she said there?
I'd love to. So as it relates to the buses, RGRTA, the Rochester Genesee Regional Transit Authority, is currently going through the implementation phases of what they call their Reimagine RTS plan, which had a lot of changes in it related to the fixed routes and the paratransit service areas, operations of the organization as well, and there's many changes, both probably good in some respect and kind of bad in some respect, as it relates to people with disabilities in particular, especially with RTS Access, which is the paratransit service offered by this transit authority. In particular, we are concerned about the funding, the fee structure, which will be increasing significantly. Currently, it's based on mileage, and the highest you can pay is about $4 one way. The highest is going to go to $8 one way, which totals a round trip of $16, which people on fixed incomes in the disability community financially cannot afford. So they're going to have to find other means of transportation, and which is one of many examples of how one would argue that the transit authority is shrinking the routes and not accommodating the needs of the disability community. I'm not familiar with the heated bus shelters that the caller was referring to, but the transit center building does make sense of why they potentially could be removed, but I know that all the stops are being looked at to implement the Reimagine RTS plan in June.
Okay. Matt Denker?
I actually think we don't talk about it enough, but improving the maintenance of, say, bus stops for transit during the winter, I think would be an even bigger gain than, say, incrementally better plowing sidewalks in some neighborhoods. you know, 25% of the city doesn't have a car. 25% of households in the city don't have a car. And I think daily ridership on RTS is something like 70 or 80,000 right now. And that alone would make a gigantic change. I mean, it's something like 10 times as many people are in the transit mode share than in, say, walking or biking to work even. I mean, the numbers are huge. And so while I do think pedestrians and cyclists need better stuff done, I think if we were going to make a change for the better rapidly and for the most number of people the fastest, doing more work towards transit would be really great.
Jason, do you agree with that?
I do. You know, one thing, every bus rider starts as a pedestrian. So getting to the bus stop is critical as well. And so I think, you know, allocating resources maybe a little bit differently could make sense, where transit routes and arterials get a higher level of snow clearance and maybe residential streets get a little bit less. You know, the bus shelter issue is unfortunately another one of those places where there's some finger pointing. RTS and the city, you know, it's one of those things where, A, it's labor intensive to do it and thus expensive. No entity is willing to really step up and do it. And I think that's one of the challenges there.
Okay. Bill writes the following. Evan, as a plow driver for a town, you start with the roads first and then the sidewalks. This is for the fire trucks, ambulances, police cars, buses, commuters, etc. If you want to pay a lot more taxes and hire more people to be ready to plow your sidewalk, then have at it. But I really think people need to be logical about the climate in which they live. Snow removal is a major undertaking. Can't you just stay in and let the people who plow do their jobs?
I mean, if we all just stay in, they don't need to plow. I don't understand. I do hear emergency services come up a lot, but also those are the vehicles that are most equipped to be able to deal with a street being relatively unplowed. I mean, when was the last time you heard about a fire truck getting stuck in the snow? Like, it's just not really a thing. It's this giant truck. It's got a lot of clearance. It can get where it needs to, certainly within reason. I mean, if we get a blizzard, there's 3 feet of snow. I mean, we're not driving anywhere in addition to not walking anywhere. I'd say that's a real challenge for everyone. But in a 6-inch snowstorm, it's not going to stop a fire truck, but it is going to stop someone in a wheelchair. It is going to stop someone from being able to walk. And if it means us paying more taxes, though, to do a better job of this, I think that's kind of worth it. I mean, that is the sort of thing that we need to say, yes, we do need to pay more taxes and do a better job of it. I mean, I'm not sure it's dissimilar to another hot button issue of something like universal healthcare. Like, yes, that's what we pay taxes for, to do a better job of this stuff.
Okay. Jesse, how do you feel about the email from Bill, the plow driver?
You know, it's tight for a lot of municipalities with their budgets. And I'm of the opinion that things have to happen incrementally. At the Rochester Cycling Alliance, we're about to make a push for the Genesee Riverway Trail to be cleared of snow, at least from Court Street to the University of Rochester. I mean, that's a major, major thoroughfare. You know, there's a lot of people that could, no matter where they live in our region, take a RTS bus to the transit center, and then it's only a probably 15-minute bike ride from the transit center to U of R. So things have to happen incrementally, and I'm hopeful that that's the direction we're going in.
I think the other important thing to remember, Rochester is unique. We are one of the snowiest large cities in the world. There's a couple in Japan. There's Quebec City and maybe one or two in Scandinavia. But in terms of cities over 200,000 people, we get more snow than anywhere else in the world. So I think that's, you know, people will bring up, well, people cycle in Amsterdam and Copenhagen when it's cold. It's cold there, and they do get snow, but not the kind of snow that we get. So I think that's important to remember as well.
Okay. So do you find some empathy for Bill there?
I do, yeah. I mean, we're a special place in so many ways, and I think the climate we have is part of that. So I do have sympathy for plow drivers, you know, having to shovel out my own driveway.
All right, I've got a lot more feedback. Let me just kind of keep ripping through this. This is from Jane, who says, Evan, I cannot speak for the city as a whole, but downtown, they can do a better job than they currently do in terms of clearing snow and making it safe for non-drivers. My mother works downtown and has to walk from the parking garage to her building. She has mobility issues. She walks with a cane, and it's often very hazardous for her with snow and ice. Plowing, shoveling, snow blowing needs to be done more and better, also salting. As challenging as it is for her, she says it's much harder for those in wheelchairs that she sees during her walk. The bus would not be convenient for her. So knowing all the complexities that Jason just talked about, and just how much snow we get, and what that means, especially when you've got 4 to 8 inches or 6 to 10 in a single shot as we get on a chunk of days, how do you give a grade here? I mean, I know that's sort of reductive, but Justin Young, based on the email here and knowing the challenges, I mean, do you have a grade for the city of Rochester on what they have to do versus what they are doing?
When you say grade,
A, B, C, D,
how they're doing currently?
Yeah.
If I was being fair and objective, I'd probably say C plus.
Okay.
I'd say about average. They definitely need to do more as it relates to the areas in particular that the person emailing was mentioning, especially as it relates to curb cuts and to places where street crossings and whatnot. I know of State and Jay, which is right on the corner of where the Center for Disability Rights is. Many times there's been that entire curb cut / crosswalk area has been covered with nothing but snow, and no one can use that crossing, and it's not safe. There's other cases throughout the entire downtown city that are just like this, and I think whatever resources need to be better allocated or to make sure that the plows are coming out more often than they do, because that's usually the case. You know, the plow comes through and they plow the snow into the crosswalk or into the curb cut area, so mm-hmm. no one can actually use that crossing. So it becomes, you know, irrelevant at that point because it's basically just a big snow pile.
Hmm. All right, Jesse Pierce, you got a grade for the city?
I would say, like Justin, a C plus or a B minus. You know, I talk to other cyclists from places like Syracuse, and they're very jealous that when Rochester gets over 4 inches of snow, that the city does have a scheme of the sidewalk plowing. So, you know, the city likes to point out that feature is the envy of, you know, other comparable cities in the snow belt.
And in some ways it's true.
Oh, absolutely it is. I could see us using easier technology because of so many sidewalk slabs being uneven. When you have those plows go through, it often creates just a sheet of ice, which to me is way more dangerous than walking in the street. So there are methods that other cities do that I would like to see explored, such as brine solutions and sweeping rather than those V plows.
Okay, Matthew Denker, grade?
Can I grade on a curve?
Yeah, of course. I knew you were going to do that, Senator.
Of course. No, I'd like to give Rochester a B plus. I mean, I lived in New York City for 8 years. It snows down there too, although clearly not 100 inches, and it's miserable.
When it snows. Yeah.
When it snows. I was lucky or unlucky enough to live in D.C. for the snowiest winter on record about 10 years ago, and it was hilariously bad. I mean, the metro stops running if it snows more than 6 inches. So it was hilariously bad. And I lived in Colorado for 3 years, and they get a lot of snow, and they don't plow it at all. Now, in Colorado, it melts within a couple days, but literally just everything shuts down for a few days. The other thing that I picked up from being out there, which I find interesting and never would have done here or where I'm from in Philly, is everyone out there owns snowshoes and crampons, which I know it doesn't do anything for a person, say, in a wheelchair.
Snowshoes and what?
Crampons, like the
Yak tracks.
Yeah. So
even Jesse, spiked... did you not know what that was either, Jesse?
I'm looking it up
currently.
It's there. I'm sorry. So it's like
I didn't know what it was either, Evan. So
you pull them over the sneakers. They have spikes on them, and they let you just walk on ice. It's in deep snow. You'd want snowshoes, but in anything that's not deep snow, crampons get the job done. And I now have sets of them. I didn't get rid of them when I left Colorado, and I use them to get around. It's fabulous. I cannot recommend it enough. Similarly, all of my friends out there who commuted to work by bike, and there are a lot of them. I mean, Colorado kind of prides itself on that sort of thing. All own fat bikes to bike to work in the winter with. I mean, these are tough options. Basically, the issue is throw money at it. Whether we spend money as a society as a whole to better clear the sidewalks, or every one of us spends that money individually to own a whole bunch of hardware ourselves to do this, that's in better or worse the solution.
I will say this. You've got someone on your list. You just can't figure it out for Christmas. I've got the romantic idea for you.
Crampons. They're crampons. Great stocking stuffer. They'll fit. It'll be amazing. They'll be in shock. You'll be in shock. They're sharp, so be careful.
I'm only sort of kidding. I think they are pretty sharp, though. This is
our pitch for REI. I hope they should send. Where should I have them send our check?
Yeah. You're not supposed to be. Okay. Jason, you want to offer a grade?
Yeah, like Matt, I'm going to grade on a curve because I look at what the rest of the class is doing.
Yeah.
And if we consider the class Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Rochester does a fantastic job. Buffalo and Syracuse don't do a thing. So, and I love Buffalo and Syracuse for different reasons, but they don't clear the snow on the sidewalks at all.
Okay, so I think that perspective and context is important. This is not easy work. And here's an email from Ithaca. Rich says, I live in the city of Ithaca. Here, sidewalks are owned by the city, but winter maintenance is the property owner's responsibility. However, a city commission just conducted a survey collecting feedback from residents on how the city might play a more active role and how it should be paid for. He says, regarding the impact of snowfall on pedestrians, I would add that even a couple of inches of snow can be an impediment. Once footfalls compress the snow, it turns to ice and becomes dangerously slippery. Just as motorists expect streets to be cleared to bare pavement, pedestrians should be able to expect the same standard for sidewalks. That's from Rich. So in Ithaca, similar to Rochester and probably most places, property owners do have responsibility, perhaps unless it gets to a certain level of snowfall. But thinking about Rich's email, I'm thinking about some of the comments I saw either in the Urbanist page or elsewhere, which says the city ought to be more aggressively hammering people who are not clearing their own sidewalks and letting this ice formation. Jason, is it practical for the city to go out and start, fining people or penalizing in some way?
Yeah, I mean, enforcement's always a tough issue. I mean, I can come back to that in a bit. I guess what I wanted to point out is just like some simple physics that are different between streets and sidewalks. So as some of my former colleagues at the city have pointed out, the physics of heavy vehicles on salted pavement sort of have a natural tendency to clear the ice and snow, where pedestrian footfalls on sidewalks just don't have the same weight, the same physics. So, I agree that different technologies are needed to clear sidewalks. I think college campuses tend to do a great job with that. They have brooms and powered brushes and things like that. Going back to enforcement, I think the laws could be different, because right now the violations are sent to the property owner, where I think there needs to be a mechanism to issue citations to the contractors that are plowing the snow into the public spaces. And I'm not clear that the law allows the city to do that right now. Mm-hmm. So I think that's something to look at.
Okay. Jesse, can we be more aggressive in enforcement?
I think so. I mean, as a city resident, I've gotten a ticket for my old car a few times parked on the wrong side of the street. So it could be a source of potential income, especially with big businesses that can be doing it. I'm not talking about, the elderly having a hard time clearing their sidewalk. But, I walk sometimes to my morning job and go by Atlantic and Russell Street where Gleason works is, and there's always a giant mountain of snow. They're perfectly capable of putting it elsewhere, of maybe taking one or two parking spots for cars to put that snow, but they choose to do it right there, and it's not right.
All right. Justin, in terms of enforcement, what do you want to see happen?
Well, I would like to see the law that the ordinance that is in place right now. I want to make sure that what that says is actually being done. And I know that we've been talking about the city of Rochester, but we also need to understand that sidewalks and these same concerns are in Monroe County as well, which there's not really, to my knowledge, I'm not an expert on it, but I'm not really familiar with any laws out in the county level that talk about pedestrian, which a lot of, just like the city, disabled folk live out in the counties as well. And we need to make sure that we're taking that into consideration as well. In terms of enforcement and fining, and which I believe was your original question,
yeah.
I think there needs to be accountability, and I think having some kind of something like that would be helpful. I think it can. I'm not sure how it would be best to be implemented, or if there is a fee structure at the moment. But I think it may differ between like if you're a big business or a small business. If you're like a family run business, I think a fee of that nature would be definitely make people understand that this is a priority that needs to have more focus, because there are family-run businesses in the city of Rochester that, for whatever reason, have the battle between the city and themselves who's responsible for cleaning their sidewalks. I don't know. I definitely would like to think about that further and continue the conversation.
Yeah. Matthew Denker, as someone in the property world here, does it seem draconian to you to start hammering people with tickets, for example? Because here's one thing that kind of comes to mind for me. I live in the city of Rochester, and I have the immediate neighbor to me is this amazing couple who their yard is always perfect, and everything they plow and they remove stuff, and they make everyone either feel really good about their street or really envious, but they're really the best.
I'm going to admit that's why my wife and I sold our house and moved to not have any grass, because we couldn't keep up with our neighbors
pristine
lawns.
You have a Dave and Patty on your street.
And I couldn't handle it.
But then there's others. And I can imagine two things happening. Either a lot of resentfulness if other neighbors get tickets on the idea that, well, I removed snow a little and some ice formed, and it's subjective. It's not like a car parked across the street. It's what level would be ticketable. But I also think if some people are doing nothing, a ticket might actually get you to act.
So I think enforcement for, say, homeowners would be a complete nightmare. Mm-hmm. That there's too many situations that too many people have. I mean, what happens if I'm in Florida for the week visiting my great aunt and it snows while I'm here? Like, what exactly do I do? Because
want me to play devil's advocate?
Someone shovel it for me.
Yeah, but, like, you're having an agreement with your neighbors.
If I'm a homeowner, I generally don't have a plow. I have plow contracts for my properties, right? That's a thing. I get that. But, like, I don't have one for my own house. You know, I shovel my own snow. So if I'm not around, just having to figure that out is a real burden, especially if I'm remote. If it snows, I mean, the problem is this all happens at once. It snows for everyone all at once. So everyone needs to find a new person to shovel while they're out of town simultaneously. Like, it's a real challenge. I think enforcing it at the, say, landowner level, whether it's smaller, one of my properties, or Buckingham of a whole tower downtown, mm-hmm. then great. I mean, I think there should be some real accountability there. Tickets and fines are fine. You could make it even more challenging than that and make it like the nuisance points. I mean, we have that same issue with renewing C of O's and nuisance points for, say, bars and any of that, which I think has finally come back. It was gone for a little while they reset the system, but I'm pretty sure that's a thing again. You know, we could absolutely do that, and I don't think it would be a terrible idea if we were to hold businesses accountable. But I do think enforcement at the homeowner level would be nearly impossible.
As we get our only break of the hour, I realize I risk neighborly relations, so it's not just Dave and Patty, it's Tony and Sue. And thank you for I live on a great street in Rochester, but I understand the pain and the frustration people feel. That's why we're having this conversation about whether urbanism sort of takes a vacation during the winter and what that means. What is required of city, government, property owners, and everybody to make sure we are multimodal. We are not just an automobile society. We're doing our jobs, and government's doing its job. And that's what we're talking about. You just heard Matthew Denker, who is a developer with Labeled Living. Justin Young is here, who is a member of the advocacy team at the Center for Disability Rights. He's a pooled trust advocate. And Jason Haremza is a planner, urbanist, citizen. Jesse Piers is cycling coordinator for the Rochester Cycling Alliance at Reconnect Rochester. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about Plan 2034 and more next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we sit down with Sarah Mengelsdorf, the new president of the University of Rochester. We're going to talk about how she views her role in the community and the U of R's role in the region at large. We'll take your questions as well. In our second hour, we get you ready for the final of 9 Star Wars movies out in the coming week. Talk with you on Monday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and on this Friday afternoon, I'm going to put out another call to the community. we want the hero slash villain identified. We want to know the name of that man who was walking down the middle of Mount Hope in the middle of November last month when we had the first major snowfall. And apparently he was just dissatisfied with the fact that there was no clearing of snow on the sidewalks. And so he was making a point, walking on the roads. And it's what got all of us talking, thinking about urbanism in winter. Hey, it was effective, whatever his intention was. So, but we don't know who that was. But we've got four great panelists here, and we're talking about what it takes to have real urbanism year-round. When it comes to Plan 2034, I think, Jesse, you were the first to invoke it. And I'll ask you just kind of to remind our listeners what it is and how you see the goals playing out over the next 15 years in Rochester.
Well, I mean, it's very common, from my understanding anyway, for cities to have 15-year plans that guide decision-making. You know, it is a very impressive document. I haven't read the whole thing, but I've certainly browsed it. And I'm impressed. If that's the city that we are at Rochester's 200th birthday, I think we really can, like the mayor says, be the best mid-sized city in the country.
Okay. And Jason, you want to kind of add to what we ought to be, how we ought to be evaluating Plan 2034?
I mean, personally, I think it's a fantastic document. I agree with Jesse. You know, the last time the city did this was 1999, 2000-ish, and the plan adopted then was a very bare-bones kind of 11-page, you know, very broad statements. 2034 is a great plan. If we can do 25% of what's in there, the city will be a much better place in 15 years.
Which, by the way, that's not like a cynical comment. These things are aspirational. So, I mean, if you can accomplish, you know, big items on that list, even if it's not all the items. Matthew Denker, how do you view it?
I'm excited by it. Although in reading all of it, I also made it a point to kind of look at the original comprehensive plan for the city of Rochester, which I think, and Jason will correct me on this, 1962?
68, 65, somewhere in the 60s.
It was somewhere in the 60s. And in some ways, this one is... As aspirational as that one was. That one was aspirational in a different sort of way, but it was an interesting document. I mean, in 1968, they were still projecting the city to be something like 400,000 people by now, which obviously it has gone the other direction from that. But I really like what's in there. I agree. If we get a quarter of it or a third of it done in 15 years, we're going to be in a great place. And I mean, I think we should be doing everything we can to do everything in it and more.
I want to return to that 1968 projection of population, because that's a remarkable thing 50 years ago to think about, and not illogical 50 years ago to think that Rochester would be a city of 400,000 just with basic population trends. But Justin Young, do you feel that the disability rights community has been included enough and sort of focused on enough when it comes to plans like 2034?
No. In Plan 2034, the word disability is only mentioned about six times, and this is a 400-page-plus document. We do not feel that our needs and our wants are included in this plan, and we have met with the city and voiced our concerns, and we're hopeful that our comments that we have written and submitted from the Center for Disability Rights specifically will be included, and making sure that when this, in 15 years or so, when the 2034 plan does happen, whatever pieces of it they wish to happen, that accessibility, disability rights, that our community is not being left behind.
Bill writes to the program to say, Evan, interesting grades from your panel. No one gives the city of Rochester an A, but some good grades nonetheless, based on how Rochester compares to other cities. I'm left wondering, is it impossible for the city to get an A without significantly raising taxes to pay for what else needs to be done during the winter? That's a fair question. Can you do any of what... Can we get to an A with Matthew Denker without raising taxes?
I think we can, actually. If we were to, in much the same way that Reimagine RTS is kind of reimagining the bus system to be along frequent corridors to kind of increase the density of service as opposed to the reach, I think if we were to switch equipment some, which does... I mean, it would be some kind of investment right now, but at the end of the day, you know, all of the plows are going to die eventually. We're going to need to replace them. So if we were to switch equipment to do more sweeping and less V-plowing, and then simultaneously try and focus on a set of corridors in that same way, that in fact we could get an A. I mean, there still could be someone stuck walking down the middle of the street in a neighborhood somewhere, and I get that. And, you know, we should be trying our best to do as much as we can for everyone everywhere. But at the same time, if we did actually make it that frequent corridors, that places that there are more pedestrians rather than fewer pedestrians, that we could make some real strides towards hitting an A.
Okay, Jason?
One thing I'd like to look at, and again, I've spoken about this issue with some of my former colleagues. Holland, Michigan gets a lot of snow. It's on the west side of Michigan, near Lake Michigan. And they have a whole system of heated sidewalks in their downtown area. And, you know, I've often thought, like, if the city identified priority pedestrian areas such as downtown, such as neighborhood business districts, is it a cost benefit to do that? Because then, you know, yes, there's a lot of upfront costs, but the ongoing maintenance is much lower. And so I would love to see a pilot project that looked at that and even using alternative energy to heat these.
Sarah says, great conversation. I'm curious to know if the wealthier Rochester neighborhoods get services faster and better than neighborhoods that are less wealthy. That's from Sarah. I don't know the answer to that, and I certainly am not an expert on how plowing, for example, of streets, roads, sidewalks, other clearances. I don't have a good way of answering that, Sarah, and I don't have any way of working for the city of Rochester. It's not my assumption, Jason, for example, that it would be different.
Certainly not on purpose.
Right,
I mean, I guess just from my own experience, I live in what I understand to be a middle-income neighborhood. Yes, it's in the southeast, but it's middle-income, probably one of the poorer neighborhoods in the southeast, and I find the service to be great. Now, it is the southeast, so I can't speak to what happens in the other quadrants of the city.
Okay. So there was one email that I think I've already accidentally deleted, which was in regards to some construction companies having contingency plans for rerouting traffic when work is going on, and wondering if it would be feasible for a city of Rochester to have sort of a rerouting of pedestrian traffic when there's heavy snowfall, et cetera. I'm not aware of any idea that you could reroute either bike traffic or pedestrian traffic realistically. Matthew?
I think that would be a nightmare for pedestrians. One of the things I've always found deeply amusing, is not the right word, unfortunate, is if you've ever looked at, say, highways and things involving highways, that the exit ramps are all very direct. But if you have a pedestrian walkway over it, it's very indirect. But the minimum effort's being put in by someone driving. If you had to go around 13 more loops, it would make very little difference to what you're doing. Whereas if we could get a straighter path for a pedestrian, it would actually meaningfully save them time. I think it would be tough. From a bike standpoint, I think some of that's naturally occurring. I'm sure Jesse could speak to this better, but I think depending on the weather conditions that you do pick a slightly different route, and encouraging that wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing.
You want to add to that, Jesse?
Well, I mean, a lot of cyclists just will choose the firmest ground to get where they want to go. Even if it adds miles to your commute, you don't want to slip. I've had that happen. So I tend to stick to the pavement.
I think as we get ready to wrap, I think it's valuable for us in our own communities thinking about our responsibility. And I want to ask all of our guests who, if we're not at an A-level community in the winter when it comes to urbanism, multimodality, and true access for everyone, who is most responsible for that gap between an A and whether we're to B, C, whatever? Justin, where do you lay most of that?
I'm not really sure I have a good answer for that question. I would say definitely if we want to get to that A level, we need to make sure that those that are responsible for doing their jobs as outlined in what everyone agreed to, whether it be mutual conversations, whether it be legislation, whether it be executive orders from the mayor. I'm not sure whatever examples you can be given, but just make sure that people are working together collectively to make sure that pedestrians with disabilities can go where they wish to go, so they can be active, contributing citizens of their community just like everyone else.
Okay. Jesse? Where do you lay that gap, whether it's government, property owners, motorists who don't think you ought to be on the road with your bicycle? Where do you lay that?
I think it's all of us, and it's a big effort to change the culture. I think the city administration and City Hall and certainly the county can do more to let motorists know that cyclists have every right to the street, that we don't have to get on the sidewalk. It's a culture change that has to happen, and that takes all of us.
Do you see that change happening?
Slowly, I do. I do. I've had a lot of great conversations with Mitch Gruber, Alex Udelson, Kelly Materko. So we're making progress.
Yeah. And give me one city in the country where you've seen that change happen already.
Well, I mean, there's a perception that you can't be a winter city and be a good biking city, and that's not true. Montreal, Minneapolis, Boston, Chicago, Calgary, there's a lot of them.
Okay. Matthew Denker, if we're going to get to that A level, who is most responsible?
I think it has to be the systems route. I think it has to be the city, whether that's them directly doing things or pressing for groups to do it, like I said, to force, you know, business owners downtown to do more. I think it has to come from the top.
Okay, Jason?
Yeah, I'd agree. It's you know, the sidewalks are public infrastructure. It's the public entity's responsibility at the end of the day, but yet sidewalks to date have been treated in this quasi-private manner when it comes to snow maintenance. And I think just fundamentally that's wrong and unfair. But I will say, because I am a history buff, I'm going to throw this in here, that Rochester has been wrestling with this issue since before it was a city. The first laws were passed by the village of Rochester in 1827. So we've been trying to figure this out for 192 years. So, you know, I think it's great to continue the conversation and, you know, probably we'll never fully solve it.
And with that, that's great history. That's really interesting stuff. By the way, what percentage of Rochester property owners do you think realize the guidelines and laws when it comes to sidewalk snow removal?
5%.
5%. 1 out of 20. So know the rules. And for the most part, unless you get 4 inches or more, got to do a better job. And I want to thank all the neighbors on my street who always have it shoveled before I even get out there. There's some great people and great people on this panel. Matthew, Justin, Jesse, Jason, thanks for being here. We appreciate the conversation this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Christina Demo volunteering with us. Emma Ray Stein is our intern, and Megan Mack is the producer and the engineer today, removing the proverbial snow from all of the broadcasts and making it smooth sailing. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great weekend wherever you are, and we're back with you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.